It's showtime.
You're listening to The Bank On It Show with John Siracusa.
Hi, this is Arad Levertov.
This is Adam Jackson.
This is Zubin Matthews.
This is Lamine Zarad.
This is Renaud Laplanche.
This is Uncle Joshi.
This is Robert Kral.
This is Elad Souf.
This is Brent Jackson.
This is Oak McTavish.
This is Natasha Vanier.
This is Blake West.
This is Mike Saul from Warburg Labs, and you're listening to The Bank On It Show with John Siracusa.
Now, without further ado, your host.
Here's Johnny.
Over the last decade, a lot of amazing technologies and companies have been invested in and built, which created the finance industry as we know it today. A lot has been done, but there is so much more to go. And this podcast was created to tell the stories of the people who are building and investing in the future of fintech. I'm John Siracusa, founder and host of the Bank On It podcast and founder of ListenDeck, a podcast audio and video production company. Through my production company and after producing over 1,500 episodes in fintech, I realize every founder and investor has an intuition of a possibility in fintech, and through their superpower with sheer will and determination, they make that possibility a reality. On this podcast, I discuss with my guests the pattern matching they nurtured through experience, personal characteristics, and advice. The theories they devised and the means in which they test theories to convert the right ones into reality. This podcast is their story unscripted. I'm here to ask the right questions to verbalize why they built or invested in the fintechs that they did. If you're looking to build, partner, or invest in fintech, this podcast is for you. If you like what you hear today and want to support us, please feel free to give this show a 5-star rating and a podcast application of your choice. You can also follow me on Twitter, or X, and Medium at John Siracusa, JohnSiracusa, or on LinkedIn at Siracusa. In today's episode, I had a chat with Blake West and Mike Saul, co-founders of Warble Labs. Blake and Mike both joined me on this podcast where we discuss leveraging blockchain for financial systems, the transition from Coinbase, and learning smart contracts. They talk about some of their ventures, such as Goldfinch Protocol and Haran Finance, all of which is aiming to make cryptocurrency more accessible with addressing challenges around stablecoin regulations and banks' acceptance of digital currencies. So recording remotely with me today, I have Blake West and Mike Saul. Blake and Mike are both co-founders of Warble Labs. Hey guys, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.
It's my pleasure. So why don't we get started first with what exactly is Warburg Labs?
Sure. So Warburg Labs is a technology company, and what we are focused on doing is building technology that uses blockchain to improve the way real financial systems work. And so we started out the company 4 years ago and built the Goldfinch protocol, which is a protocol for creating decentralized lending around the world, and then recently launched a new product called Haran Finance, which is a robo-advisor focused on bringing access to private credit, and that's built on top of the Goldfinch protocol.
Awesome. And so, Blake, did you build it yourself?
Yes, I wrote a lot of the code for Goldfinch, and so, not that much of the code for Haran Finance because we've expanded the team a lot, and we have a lot more engineers in the team, so we're doing management now.
Although at the beginning days, Blake and I were just, for those first few weeks, right, we were just pair programming, both like taking a Udemy class to learn how to do Solidity, which is the coding language that Ethereum uses. And then we were just pair programming on smart contracts. I remember once we spent, a full 2 days just figuring out how to handle decimal places on smart contracts.
They're not natively
I think it was at my place, right? We were using my monitor and trying to figure that out. So the very beginning, even I wrote a few lines of code at the beginning, but I think those are all disappeared by now. So
yeah.
So were you programmers before? Like, were you able to code in other languages before, and that's why you were able to understand and learn something new, like with smart contracts? Or did you learn from scratch totally?
No. I have a long history of development, and I worked as a senior engineer at Coinbase prior to this, and then spent other time as a engineer at other startups around the Valley. So yeah, had plenty of experience doing engineering. The Solidity thing was just literally about that language, and every language kind of has its own quirks. And so we were just diving into that particular thing, which is a new language for us. But
So what did you do at Coinbase?
Yeah, I was a senior engineer there, worked on a lot of backend systems, was on the core payments team for a while. Also, one of my bigger projects was around USDC rewards program. So it's still on Coinbase. If you put in USDC, they'll pay you X percent as a reward for holding on to USDC. I built a lot of that project as well, at least on the backend side.
Mike, so before you co-created, you know, Warble Labs, what were you doing before?
I was also at Coinbase. I was running the product analytics team there. So my background is in data science. I've done data science at a lot of different companies. And yeah, Blake and I were both at Coinbase, but we've known each other for a very long time. We went to college together and were roommates our freshman year of college. So that goes way, way back, but we were both at Coinbase at the same time.
So you guys were roommates together, then you worked at Coinbase together, and then you created a company together. That's crazy. Like, so did you guys know each other when you were kids, or did you meet in college?
We met in college on the first day. We were randomly paired together as freshman year roommates, which was, very, very fateful thing. We've worked on a lot of projects over the years. I mean, some other fun ones were like a music collaboration website in college. Didn't really go anywhere. A little bit of this like Facebook app we were doing to like organize events. We built a music notation system together and a bunch of other things. So,
where'd you guys go to university?
UPenn.
UPenn, nice. So usually co-founders, when they, you know, they were, like, say, roommates together, and then they work at a company together and create a company together, they're quite close, right? And so if you first met at college or university, what pretty much made you fall in love with each other, per se?
That is a very odd question. I've never been asked that question before, and I don't think we ever talked about it. So I'll just speak for myself here. I felt like it was it was kind of a slow burn, in the sense that Mike and I we're not the type of people I think we naturally would have maybe met or become friends, except that we were paired together. But we realized that we both just really like building things. We both really like just like investigating stuff, learning about things. We both have a business and an artistic side to us. And so there was just a lot of, I think, deep personality overlaps that may not have been obvious on first blush, and I think would have taken a while for us to figure out if we weren't just roommates.
But the what you described, like, there was the one shared thing is really liking building things. And so that's what we were, even I feel like even going all the way back to freshman year, there were probably projects or things that we were working on in the early stages, because even though our personalities are pretty different, we just like to build stuff, just like for the sake of building stuff, not just to like build a company, but because we like to see something that exists in the world that we put together. So I think there's that. And then also, as we've been working together more, and including at the company, including both the fun times and the difficult times, I think we have shared values, which is really crucial, that I found, because this is now, I guess, technically my fifth time starting a company with many different founders. And I think this one's clearly worked way better, just generally speaking. I think one is like a really sort of shared values, which means that when we're trying to figure out how to handle problems, we can just focus on the problem that's in front of us. And there's not this whole other layer about what we're trying to optimize for or how we think about things in general. So yeah, it made it work well.
That's actually quite interesting. So I think that focusing on what's important is very important, right? Like being able, not just focusing on what's important, but being able to focus on what's important, right? If you have distractions like, I don't know, the wrong types of KPIs, but just different types of KPIs that are different than who you are intuitively or intrinsically, right? And so did you guys share that kind of thing where like, it's just, it vibed well because you understood this is what's important. You both agreed upon that naturally.
Yeah, I think for the most part, yes. We like pretty naturally agree on what's most important at the given stages. Now, of course, there's a lot of discussion and sometimes disagreement about how exactly to arrive there. But that's just okay. All part of a good functioning co-founder relationship.
I think there's like different layers. There's, okay, when you're in the flow of things and you have things coming up every day. Some of them are bigger questions and some of them are smaller questions, and how to answer that is one layer of like, how do you focus on what's important? But then even at the outset of starting a company from scratch, and what's the layer of shared values and motivation for that? Of like, what's the level of ambition? What's the level of innovation? What's the level of types of things you want to see exist in the world and that you like actually want to spend time working on? It's this like whole other meta, more existential level of sort of alignment, I would view as like even more critical, that like there's just like this fundamental, yeah, we both want to see this type of thing exist for similar reasons, and we have similar levels of like the ambition of what we want it to look like kind of thing. And then that just sets a common ground that then even when you're into like the day-to-day things that come up, you're still coming from the same place and like trying to get to the same destination, I guess.
Yeah, I think just to make that a little more concrete, right? Like when we were starting Goldfinch, a lot of it, you know, we'd been at Coinbase for a couple of years, right? And we were seeing a lot of teams starting to build in the DeFi space, and obviously a lot of teams building different blockchains and stuff like that. But Mike and I were both pretty clear from the beginning that like we were personally really excited about trying to do something around the blockchain space that we felt was providing like real value and doing something in the real world, right? That we felt there was just too much stuff going on in the crypto space that was like self-referential or just only about sort of trading and making money. And it felt like there wasn't much beyond that. And we were like, we got to do something here that's more than just the trading, the making money, and also more than just building infrastructure to make that happen, right? We wanted to find something that felt more real and that was helping to kind of like, you know, break out of the matrix. It was kind of a phrase we used at the time for like of
the matrix, like the movie Matrix, right?
Well, yeah, yeah, as in, you know, crypto felt like it was all so in its own little world here that we wanted to find something that kind of break out of that and find something more like in the real world. And that was, as an example, sort of the shared value where we're coming from the same place here of like, those are the only types of companies in the crypto space we were even sort of thinking about building.
I'm actually curious, like when you guys, is there something that you share that maybe share as an interest that has nothing to do with business? Like, what do you geek out on, that kind of stuff?
It's funny because before we started the business, what we would geek out on was like business ideas and like these like side projects that were like
side projects,
little yeah. mini business type things.
Or like products, but yeah, they're business right. per se, but
yeah.
Yeah. We don't share too many overlapping interests outside of that. I mean, some, like we go to concerts together and stuff like that. And obviously we, you know, go to like restaurants and hang out, but those aren't really like hobbies and stuff. Like we hang out a lot as friends and we've done a lot of activities together over the years, like tons of stuff. We've traveled to different countries and yeah, I've gone to a lot of shows and stuff like that, but not like a hobby per se, I guess.
Which concerts have you gone to together?
Oh, I mean, a bunch of stuff. We've seen Radiohead together. We've seen Alt-J together.
Oh, man,
we've been to Outside Lands a couple times. We went to the Austin City Limits Music Festival like several times together.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because Blake lived in Austin right out of school. And so I would head out there basically every year for the Austin City Limits. We'd go there. Yeah. So yeah, there you go. There's an interest, Blake, that we share, which is like live music.
Yeah, just seeing live music. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome, man. Where have you traveled together, if you don't mind me asking?
Europe, Japan, the Cape.
Yeah, right. Cape Cod. Yeah.
I guess those are the main trips. I feel like maybe we're missing stuff.
Yeah. But oh, also, you know, all of our like, college friends' weddings, things like that.
It's yeah, yeah.
Form of travel, but not quite the same thing.
When you're hanging out, like traveling or whatnot, do you talk about business ideas a lot or product ideas?
Well, now we talk about Warbor and inherent finance. But yeah, before that, I think it was a lot of that.
We talk about a lot of random ideas of things to start.
So if I could ask, what are you guys excited about? Like what that's happening in the world, like over the next few years or something that you see and you're building towards?
Within the crypto space?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm personally really excited that really just in the last like year, and I think Heron's leading the way on a lot of this, the UX of crypto has really leveled up.
Yeah.
Or at least I should say it's possible for it to really level up. We were really excited about that. And so we were one of the first teams to be putting all these pieces together. But specifically, you've got these layer twos, which make the transactions really cheap. The Dankun upgrade just happened in January or February, which made them about 1000x cheaper again. So you now have sent to subsent transactions happening. It's much faster too. The block times are like 2 seconds. You've got embedded wallets. You've got account abstraction that allows your people to easily and now cheaply sponsor gas for other people so that users don't have to like know about gas fees and have that stuff in their wallet. They don't know how to have seed phrases and whatnot. And so really at this point, crypto can be, if the developers want it to be, completely equivalent experience to using Web 2, which has just been a huge barrier. Like real people just don't want to deal with Chrome extensions and seed phrases and all that stuff. And so I'm really excited that we're finally here. It can finally compete on the merits of UX. And it's I think, going to open up the door to a lot of what the original promises were around international payments, using crypto to pay for things. Also, stablecoins has just gotten a lot bigger over the last 5 years. And now it's like many tens of billions of dollars of stablecoins. People are talking about building coins in other currencies as well. You have like stable euros and stuff like that. So I think a lot of these pieces are going to come together to make it such that crypto starts to really have a lot of real world utility.
Yeah, I think of it as like a lot of these new kind of infrastructural pieces that Blake mentioned make the difference between crypto being just straight up usable and not usable in terms of actually being able to incorporate in anything.
Yeah.
Probably similar to like, I don't know, the beginning days of the internet to like send an email originally. Didn't you have to like run your own server or something and like connect manually to the SMTP protocol or something like that? And like that is what crypto has felt like over the past 4 to 6 years, where you need to create your own seed phrase and install a Chrome plugin with MetaMask and like know how to like do all this complicated stuff versus just like log into an account and do stuff the way we're all kind of used to doing. But we needed a lot of these pieces in place that Blake described that have really just kind of come up in the last year, really 1 to 2 years, but even just the past year, that even make it possible. So I view it as like we're still like at the beginning of stages of like, you know, making email usable, like the version of that, but for crypto, which I think makes it possible to do all of these things that realistically to have done that in the last few years, you would have had to be like super, super deep into the crypto space, like been like some form of, you know, technical or like having an engineering background yourself kind of thing. But now we can open it up, generally speaking, to just make it more widely accessible to like a lot more people.
What's still missing right now?
I think one piece that's still missing, I think, is regulatory clarity, especially around stablecoins and the ability for banks to hold stablecoins. I think that alone is like single-handedly holding back a lot of use of crypto, because without banks being able to hold it and without there being clarity, it's tough for merchants to like take it and be like, well, what do I do with this? You know, and like, can I put it in my bank? Can I turn it dollars? Can I like use it to pay other people? Like, we just don't have that seamless on and off ramp experience. And I think it really comes down to the fact that banks can't hold it and they don't know what to do with it. And so you're left having to go through exchanges, which are like these weird kind of like pseudo gatekeeper bank now things in crypto. And it shouldn't be like that. I wish it wasn't, but that's what it is. And I think that's a big hurdle right now. Not going to be insurmountable. Like, people are talking about stablecoin bills, and I'm sure it'll happen at some point, but I think it's a big hurdle right now.
I think also just adding to that, in addition to the regulatory aspect, I think a lot of the infrastructure now is there. Like, we have all the pieces in place, but because it's so new, not many folks have actually put them all together. I mean, that is one thing that we do with Heron Finance, where you can kind of like sign up and create an account the way you're used to doing so. But we had to piece together a number of different components under the hood, including several vendors where we were their very first customer. And like, we, you know, we launched this a few months ago and we're the first customer for some of these vendors. And I think, but like, it's like literally just now, within months of now, all the pieces are there. And so the other thing that's missing is just more teams in the space building it and putting that all together and just creating more of these products on top of the technology.
So, well, the world of being an entrepreneur is crazy. It moves so fast. You can have super high highs, super low lows, add crypto into it and blockchain and how quickly that's moving. My God, it's just, so I could just imagine that you've both have experienced super high highs and super low lows. And sometimes I'm sure in the same day, right? Like, do you remember any that you'd like to share?
Sure. I mean, the super highs that come to mind is for us when we were building the Goldfinch protocol in 2021, the protocol was doubling in size every 4 months for basically the whole year.
Every 2 months, I think.
Was it every two? It was something crazy like that. That was very exciting. It's like in that mode of there's way more demand than can be kept up with, and how do we build for that? And also just the clarity then of like, oh, there are these folks who really want this. We just got to build it for them. So that was definitely the highs there, super highs there. And then when I think of sort of super lows, one is there've been a couple defaults on the Goldfinch protocol, which intellectually we knew that's just a part of making loans. Like, not every single loan is perfect. There's always some non-zero amount of default. But then when it's actually happening in that moment, you know, it really sucks.
It's painful.
And so that's what I think of when I think of the lows there is like reminding ourselves intellectually, this is part of the known risks of like any asset class, but then also being in that moment and figure out how to deal with it was one of the lesser fun parts of the process.
Yeah, I'll add on a couple things there. I remember during 2021, there were times of like we sort of opened the product up to a broader audience of people. And, you know, we had in Slack, you had these like notifications when somebody would deposit, and it would just be like, ding, 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 ding. Like, it was crazy. Like, there was just so much demand for this at the time, because the crypto space in general was just growing so fast, and people were getting into it so much. And this also kind of reminds me at Coinbase, which obviously has been through many of its own cycles and many of its own very high highs and very low lows. Brian Armstrong likes to just kind of repeat to the company over and over again that like, it's never as good as it seems and it's never as bad as it seems. Because I think he's just been through so much over the last 12 years that it's just one of the lessons learned. I feel like I've picked that up as well. That even when things seem like they're going great, you got to remember it might not be there tomorrow. Things can change. Anything can happen. And at the same time, when things seem like they're horrible, you got to remember like, we've been through bad stuff before too. We can make through this one as well. You know, it's just, you always got to just kind of keep putting one foot in front of the other.
And in the crypto space, things can move so fast, and people think they're so brilliant because, you know, they made a lot of money at one period of time, right? But then lose it all whenever, you know? So trying to keep a cool head. I'm actually quite curious, like, how you guys keep that cool head? Because you're an entrepreneur in the crypto and blockchain space, right? Like, that is, you know, you could feel like you're a genius by getting it right. Like you said, you doubled every 2 months, right? Like, like it's crazy, right? And you're like, oh my God, we're so smart. And I mean, that's over exaggerating a little bit, but essentially, and then suddenly something happens and you're like, oh, we're not so smart, right? Like, and you know, how do you deal with that yourself? Like mentally, like, how do you like just keep cool? Like you mentioned, like things aren't as bad as they seem and they're not as good as they seem.
That's a good question. I don't know. I have some thoughts on like, we've done this in like a few different ways. A couple of things I'm thinking about is like just one tactical, like very tactical thing that we do is we've been doing this for the last 4 years since we started the company, but Blake and I will do kind of like reflections on Friday afternoon of just thinking like literally every week, just taking a second to like step back and be like, okay, you know, how's it going? What's good? What's bad? And I think part of that is also checking ourselves a little bit, like when things seem like they're going really well, being like, okay, are we just being lucky right now? Or, you know, what is from like a first principles basis driving this right now? And like just trying to understand and like take stock of the situation, and just doing that on a regular basis is helpful to not get caught up. And then I think a second piece, going back to having shared values and that being really important from the beginning. One of the things we were kind of explicitly here to do when we started the company is signing up for a roller coaster. Like, we knew this getting into it. This is explicitly what we were looking to do, what we wanted to do. And then I think it's helpful when we're experiencing some of the like most difficult situations to be able to like remember that and like actually like say it like, okay, like this is what it means to start a company. This is what we've signed up for. Like, like we wanted to have these lows in addition to the highs because we want to learn, we want to experience it, we want to get better at it. And so being able to have that shared value and then remind ourselves of it in the moment, it's just like a good way to keep things in context.
And like everything moves so fast, it's really hard to predict where it's going to go. Right. Like, even though you're building something now, it's impossible. Like, no one could have predicted the pandemic, right? Like COVID or anything like that. Right. So how do you build a framework that can adjust and be flexible as the world changes around it, or how people utilize crypto around it?
I think that one other thing Mike has definitely harped on since the beginning is what he calls avoiding shiny object syndrome, which I think happens all the time in crypto, or at least can happen. And there's also, of course, you know, that famous quote from Jeff Bezos about like, you know, well, the question I want to ask is what's not going to change over the next 10 years rather than what's going to change. And yeah, I think we try and think about those things in terms of like, what are the aspects of the product that people are just going to want, right? You know, for all time, right? What's something interesting that you're doing that feels real and feels durable, rather than, you know, there are so many things in crypto that you can build to chase a extremely fickle audience if you wanted to. And I think that teams can get stuck there, right? Or they can run out of cash there because, well, it works for a little while and then it stops working. And what do you do next? And so we've just always tried to think about, okay, what's like a real product that's going to provide real value? And, you know, we're definitely wrong about that all the time. So at least that's the thing we're keeping in mind when we're deciding what to build. I'm trying to actively avoid the shiny object thing that just showed up a second ago. It's probably not a great thing to build for.
And there's a lot of shiny objects in the world of building a tech startup.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely, well, that goes in all companies, not just all crypto, companies, but yeah. I do think it's sort of especially prevalent in crypto.
Yeah. So I'm curious, if you could do anything differently throughout your entrepreneurial experience of building Warburg Labs and some products and so on, would you do anything differently if you could?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing that comes to mind is what we are building now with Heron Finance, creating this way for folks in the US who are accredited to get access to the private credit space, and doing this whole approach where we're registered with the SEC as a robo-advisor to be able to do that. But this whole kind of realization we came to with building Heron on top of the Goldfinch protocol, I wish we had done that. You know, we launched Goldfinch almost 4 years ago at this point, and I wish we had kind of gone straight to doing what we're doing with Heron Finance. And I think a big part of what we're doing here is we're not originating the deals themselves. We're working with these partners who do it. And there's a bunch of like learnings that came from the way Goldfinch got started at the beginning. But like two of the big learnings was, one is really focusing on what we do well, like what our team does well, what we want to do, which is the technology and platform side, like building the platform to make it possible. And then also seeing where the source of scale is for these kinds of things, and working on originations and things like that, that tends to scale up linearly with team size. It's really hard to do a ton of originations with smaller teams versus what we're building now with Heron Finance, the platform side of it, that scales a lot better. And so I think when we realized this is what we should be doing, this is how it, what should be built on top of the Goldfinch infrastructure, it felt so obvious based upon everything we had learned, but I wish we could have maybe skipped forward a few steps there and just gone straight to this.
Great. Now that we're coming to the end of the interview, I want to leave off on a final question I ask everybody, right? If you could spend a day with anyone ever, whether that person is currently alive or past, who would it be and why that person?
Yeah. Okay. So it's a really good question. Can I give like two semi-answers here?
Sure. You can't say Mike though.
I know. I spent a lot of days with Mike already.
I mean, that's just to be honest, that's not the actual answer anyway. So
yeah, it's not the actual answer, right? I think for me, a sort of political answer, I'd probably say George Washington. I just find him such a fascinating character because he's one of the only people in history to be offered almost total power after he was president, and he just turns it down. And then, of course, all the experience around building the country, around fighting the war, leading people. I mean, I just feel like he's got such an amazing track record and an amazing life. I would just love to just ask him questions for a while. That would be super fascinating. Okay, the second one, a little bit more fun. It's not a person, but I would love to just spend a day jamming with the Allman Brothers. I had a long history of playing music before getting into tech stuff, and the Allman Brothers are one of my favorite bands, and I would love to just spend all day jamming with them.
Great. And Mike, what about you?
Yeah. So you know that like that meme of like how often do people think about the Roman Empire? Like, you know, maybe I'm ashamed to admit it, but I actually think about the Roman Empire like a lot. And I think actually if I were to pick anyone, it would be Caesar, Julius Caesar, mainly just out of pure curiosity of just understanding what that was like at that time, how things were actually set up, and just feels like a completely different world, but then in many ways, you know, a lot of similarities. And so that's what comes to mind for me. But I feel like it's just like the cliche meme there of how often you think about the Roman Empire. And it's like, oh, I actually do think about it. I'd like be very curious.
Do you think about anything like Stoic philosophy, like Marcus Aurelius or anything that matter?
No, not as much. I'm more like a kind of history nerd in that
history
sense.
History nerd, like Rome itself and the structure of Rome. You know, it's crazy. Rome was around for about, 2,000 years or something, right?
It's insane. Yeah.
And then it just gone. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Over time, right? Yeah,
yeah.
Right,
yeah. And yeah, like Hannibal was a Hannibal, and I forgot all the name of the foreign generals that just picked away at it till it was nothing.
Yeah,
it's quite nuts. Yeah. So on that point, I want to say, you know, Blake and Mike, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having us, John.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening until the end of this episode. I want to personally thank Mike and Blake for being a guest on my show, but more importantly, I want to thank you, the audience, because if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't exist. And although this show is over, I look forward to seeing you next Thursday morning. I'll be releasing my remotely recorded interview with Magnus Larsen for Majority. See you real soon.
It's over, Johnny. It's over!